show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
I lost all my money in Vegas. You guys got an ATM around here somewhere?
Over there, in the media corner.
They got everything.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts to disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for April 6, 2011. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me, as always, is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Hey, if I told you, I'd have to kill you.
I thought my voice was going to crack on that one.
What are you, 12?
Welcome to Technorama. Can I take your order, sir?
Would you like fries with that, sir?
No, but I would like to supersize this show.
Supersize.
For only 99 cents, available at the PayPal button on the website.
Yeah, right.
How you been?
I'm good, man. How about you?
My week was busy last week with Vegas and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I had plenty to keep me busy, too. Trust me.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be fun, but it was work, then fun, and I went, oh my gosh, I've been up for 20 hours.
Oh gosh.
And I got to get back to sleep because I got more work in the morning.
Vegas never sleeps, and you don't either.
That's right. I got this tattoo to prove it. Where'd that come from?
it's a Hulu girl. What?
What?
Hula girl.
Honest, honey.
That's a Hulu girl.
Hulu. Coming up in this episode of Technorama, we have an arcade museum may be coming to the Bay Area residents. Don't have an Apple store near you? We've got a way to bring the store to you. And think it's hard to build an atomic bomb? We got a guy who reverse engineered it.
Sweet.
All that coming up more after this.
Take a facts-based journey through the cosmos with AstronomyCast. Join me, Dr. Pamela Gay, and my co-host Fraser Cain, publisher of Universe Today, as we discuss not just what we know, but how we know it. Topics range from dark matter to why Pluto isn't a planet. Get your episodes today at astronomycast.com or look for us in iTunes.
Hi, this is Dean Hagel from The X-Files, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
I want to believe.
It's basic what time does to people.
Hey, you know what's funny? I ended up watching a little X-Files the last weekend.
They were introduced in, what was it, like show 18 or so? 18, 19 of season one?
I don't remember. Yeah, I remember. You know, the reason I was bringing up that I was watching the X-Files, because on April 1st, Hulu had their site cranked back to 1996, complete with the dial-up theme. Yeah, the dial-up theme and everything. And you go to play a video, you hear, pew! And anyway, X-Files was right on the front page. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. That and I watched an episode of the Dana Carvey show.
And YouTube did something like that too, didn't they?
Yeah, the 1911, where all the videos had that
the scratchy,
old, scratchy. Yeah.
And they took the audio out and just played this like player piano thing.
Yeah, that's right. It was pretty cool. By the way, I have to say, there wasn't a lot of blockbuster April Fool's jokes this year, except for
Gmail.
Yeah, the Gmail thing was
funny.
The Gmail motion. But I liked the ThinkGeek had the Angry Pigs pork rinds.
What? Those were a fake?
Yeah.
Oh, I
did,
man.
By the way, I did get I did place an order at ThinkGeek that same day. It was a pocket knife that has like the flint, you know, you can start a fire with.
Yeah.
All in one, but the reason I bought it was because they had a special for each order that was like $15 or more, you get a free t-shirt. And the t-shirt says, I, for one, welcome our new computer overlords.
I want one.
Yeah. Well, you might want to go see, but, you know, that's what Ken Jennings had written on.
Or you can make a new Zazzle shirt that says, I, for one, welcome our Technorama overlords.
Dude, that's what I'm going to do.
Our binary overlords, something binary. Like that. Yeah. Shout out to the chat room. Speaking of our overlords, these are the people that really make things fun, not us.
Yeah.
We have C. Tomasi, Step K, Claudio M., Captain Rootbeer, Dan D. Man, Debdrop, NCAF1, Gru, Mad Marv, Nightstar, Susie the Geek, and Tim Elliott and ZML2008. The theme is transparency. Use your real name.
Transparency. Yay, we did it.
The theme is lack of imagination tonight.
I guess so. Well, oh well.
They changed their names all back to their regular names.
Scotch tape theme. See right through it.
Yeah, like us. This show is taped together.
Yeah.
Happy birthday goes out on this week to listeners Trevor Leticki, Future Geek. Well, he's not born yet. Also on April 6th, I should have mentioned April 6th is Trevor's birthday. Rev Tim, our buddy in the Bay Area.
Yeah, you know, I just saw a video of him the other day.
What was it? Nicaragua? He was down there
doing...
Yeah,
he was down in Nicaragua doing it on a mission
charity
trip.
Charity work. So, yeah, cool. PC Herring from Cybrosis. Hey, you know... Look right behind me, the Cybrosis thing on the webcam. He gave that to me.
Shameless plug.
Ding! Where's my dinger ding? Yeah. Ding.
Okay, we got Cybrosis thing. You need another iPad for that, right?
Thursday. I'm going to be seeing him on Tuesday night, so right before this comes out. We're going to have another dinner together.
Mm.
So I'll have to buy him a birthday dinner, I guess.
Yeah.
And on April 8th, which happens to be Donna's and my first date anniversary, it's also Christiana Ellis's birthday.
Yay.
Yay.
Wait, so how long have y'all been married?
We were married on October 8th, but our first date was on April 8th when we went to see 1964 as the Beatles. It was like a cover band impersonation thing, like the Jersey Boys, only for the Beatles.
In 1964?
It was April 8th, 1987. What is that, 24 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you went to go see what?
1964 as the Beatles. They're still touring in some way, shape, or form.
Was it a tribute band?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we did one of those recently for the Eagles.
Well, you know, me and Kim's first date was going out for wings and beer.
So make it an annual tradition to go out for wings and beer, and we'll listen to the Beatles.
I told you how we met, didn't I?
Did I tell you that Donna asked me out on the first date?
Well, actually, that's funny because it happened to me as well.
We suck.
Well, what's worse is she wanted my phone number, and she was trying to figure out how to get it, and her roommate had called me. She had a roommate that was a guy, and he called me because he was coming over, and to get my number, she hit redial.
Oh, that's smooth.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's how my sister got the number to the hotel we were staying at for our wedding, wedding night, so they could prank us. You know, like short sheet the bed and all that good stuff. Yeah, nice.
Your honeymoon, right?
I hate redial.
Okay. Yeah, well, I love it. It worked for me.
I was a little smoother. I had to go on a trip to Florida, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed somebody to keep notes in all the classes. And since Donna had two of my classes, I got her number that way. Could you keep notes so I can call you when we get back? Wink, wink.
Yeah.
All right. If it happens to be your birthday and you're not on the birthday calendar, we wish you a very, very happy birthday. And to all those people that did make it on the birthday calendar, so, you know, enough said there.
Bet if Donald will never let that happen again.
If you're not on the birthday calendar, never let that happen again. Go over to chuckchat.com/wiki and get your name on there so that we don't miss you out and we can wish you all the best. In fact, I even snuck a few people on there that weren't on the calendar. Neener, neener. You can listen to the live stream Sunday nights at 9:30 Eastern. We'll put out a tweet, so just follow us on Twitter and you'll get the message. Sunday nights, we want to see you there in the chat room, on the webcam. It's a lot of good, fun time. On this day in history for April 6, 2011, it was on this date in 1652 at the Cape of Good Hope, Dutch sailor Jan van Riebeeck establishes a resupply camp that eventually becomes Cape Town.
Cellulite was passed. I couldn't
Not
do that
cellulite.
With a straight face. I couldn't say that with a straight face. Celluloid was patented today in 1869.
Give me an easy one, Ethan. Today in 1909, Robert Perry and Matthew Henson allegedly reached the North Pole.
Varney Airlines makes its first commercial flight on this date in 1926. Varney is the root company of United Airlines.
Launch of Early Bird, the first communications satellite, happened today, and later placed into geosynchronous orbit today in 1965.
And on the same day in 1965, the British government announces the cancellation of the TSR-2 aircraft project.
Was that the predecessor to the TRS-80? And the Pioneer 11 spacecraft is launched today in 1973 to explore the asteroid belt Jupiter and Saturn. Happy birthday goes out of this date to French astronomer Guillaume Bergeron, I hope, born today in 1851.
And also born in April 6th, 1890, Anthony Fokker, the Dutch aviation engineer pioneer.
Yeah, you remember the German planes in World War II?
Yeah, Ben Stiller played Anthony.
Careful. Lando Calrissian, actor Billy Dee Williams, turns 74 today.
And finally, Italian astronaut Paolo Nespoli is 54.
And that's the way it was on this day in history for April 6th, 2011.
Good news, everyone!
I love the reverb.
So I was getting that kind of Memorex, you know, with the guys in the chair.
In the news, we have a group raising money for an arcade museum. This to us from Will, the computer guy. This is found in the San Francisco Examiner that says...
Is it arcade? I think it was like video games, like consoles and stuff, right?
Yes, because there already is. If you go down to the Embarcadero, there's like a penny arcade thing with...
Yes, I've been there.
You have. And somewhere in my long lost archive, I have an audio recording when I was there with the National Park Service a couple of years ago.
That's right. I mean, we honestly talked about this. Yeah, I remember that.
I started
that.
Editing that and I have no clue what happened to it.
Feeling,
but it was one of my better audio
internet.
No, it's hanging around. I have the raw audio somewhere. I just can't find it. It's around. Let me read this to you a little bit. As any video game player can attest, beating one level and reaching the next can be a daunting task. But the Bay Area-based Museum of Art and Digital Entertainment is attempting to accomplish it without a joystick or screen. There's a hook for you they want to read you.
Yeah.
MADE, M-A-D-E, a nonprofit group seeking to preserve the history of video gaming while legitimizing video games as a work of art, hopes to establish the city's first and only video game museum by raising $20,000 by April 18th. Get that, MADE, Museum of Art and Digital Entertainment? Catchy.
I got it.
Yeah. It's like Stella or Lame.
Stella.
It's not recursive, though. I think they should think a little harder. The group began its All for Nothing fundraising campaign February 12th via Kickstarter.com, a website where people can fund budding projects.
Mm-hmm.
If the group doesn't raise the necessary $20,000 by April, it's game over for the project.
Game over, man.
But they've been making some great progress. And as of March 2nd, when this came out, they've already raised $12,500?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so they're within reach. I'd be curious to see how much they actually have. You can read the full article. They plan to buy a 2,000 square foot facility and put their stuff in there, set it up kind of like the Computer History Museum. But of course, they're going to need funding, which is provided by grants and admission fees to keep it run.
Now, they should be able to play them. That's the only thing.
Oh, you know, absolutely.
The Computer History Museum, they have a lot of stuff that we're not supposed to touch.
Yeah. Oh, really? Well,
but I think that they have to, you know, have these games functional.
Yes. Or have some that are a pristine display, but yet have some that can take the wear and tear. Because, you know, if somebody's cranking on a game controller, you're going to go through some game controllers.
Well, I mean, I guess they would have like some MAME stuff. I don't know. But I don't know what they're playing. But yeah, they should have some. They obviously would have some playable games. That'd be stupid not to.
I'll donate some.
You know, I remember a while
I'll
back.
I'll put my Pong up for grabs.
Your Pong. I remember a long time ago, think it was at Discovery Place. Me and a friend of mine went up there, and it's in Charlotte. It's like a almost like a kid's museum, but they had this one exhibit about video games. It's, I think it was there. And they had a bunch of video game cabinets, and we went in there, and they had like the old Star Trek game and anything you can imagine. I just remember going up there to play that, but that was a lot of fun. I wish they'd have like a traveling show like that.
A traveling video game show. That's what we'll come up with next.
Kickstart it.
Go get that old crappy Winnebago that's for sale down on the corner for like $500.
I'm going to Kickstarter and start up a project about a podcast that does video games. See how much money I can raise.
The Mobile Podcast Video Game Museum.
Yeah. Mermaid.
We're going to one up. Yeah, we'll come up with a cool acronym eventually. Don't worry about it.
M-M-A-D-E. Mermaid.
We can't figure that out, but there's a guy who figured out how to reverse engineer the atomic bomb.
Nice.
That's right. If you want to watch a very interesting 15-minute video, check out the news link or the link in the show notes to motherboard.tv. This is actually posted a couple of years ago. I was amazed. John Coster Mullen. Oops, I'm sorry. Two decades after helping to design the first atomic bomb, Robert Oppenheimer, director of the Manhattan Project, was asked to describe how he felt after the bomb's first test. And he, this is, I quote, "If the radiance of 1,000 suns were to burst at once into the sky," he quoted from the Hindu scripture, "that would be like the splendor of the Mighty One. Now I am become death, destroyer of worlds." Wow, that's a pretty heavy quote.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this gentleman, they visited John Coster Mullen in his Wisconsin home. What was it? Not Waupaca. Was it Waupaca? No. Hey, can't remember. Starts with W, like most towns around here. Wyawega, Waupaca, Watoma.
Yeah.
It's a crazy Indian French thing or something. And he re-engineered. Although the government will not confirm or deny what he has found, he re-engineered the little boy, the one that fell on Hiroshima, and then Fat Man fell on Nagasaki.
Right.
I think I got those straight. Let me get you a desktop image of this thing. You know what they look like. Well, he brought it to... He's a truck driver, and his background... He started out college as a physics student, and he hung out with a lot of these physics people.
Okay. Nerds.
But then, you know, he dropped out of college and did his own thing, and now he's a truck driver. But he still has this interest, you know, kind of like I think I'm still a computer scientist.
Yeah, right.
Because that's what I went to college for. You know, who knew?
Yeah.
And
look where we are today.
Yeah. You know, lonely podcaster talking to nerds on the internet. And he came up with these drawings, and his first job was to make a mock-up. But he said he didn't just want to make the shell mock-up. He wanted to do the insides right. And he was clarifying a lot of things. Like, in order to get the nuclear detonation, you have to take... they said they were taking a projectile of... Was it uranium and jamming it into the plutonium or something?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the other way around. They were taking it's basically a female shape cup of one material and a male shape of another, and they were basically jamming these two together, but people had it wrong. It wasn't the male jamming into the female, it was the female ramming up against the male, to put some all kinds of innuendos on that. But that's what they
say anything.
And he took his drawings to an actual government official, and the guy says, "Where did you get these drawings?" Like, real suspicious like. And he said, "You know, I made them up based on what I could figure fit like, where and what
I
went where."
I don't know why.
But he said, "Are they right?" And he said, "Well, I can't tell you if they're right or not, because that's a highly classified government secret." But then he took it to University of Chicago, was it? Fermi Lab, but it was the place where Enrico Fermi did that first nuclear chain reaction thing.
Right.
And the physicists were talking to him and said, "Dang, this guy, you know, if it's going to work, this guy got it pretty well right." And it was, in one point, he says there was a clip in there that says he and his neighbor and his neighbor's boy helped him load this mock-up into the back of his van.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, you look at your neighbor's
like... Where
are you
going to test this, though?
That's well, it's not active. He doesn't have the uranium in this thing.
Yeah, that would be a...
It's a complete mock-up. But they're loading it up, and he goes, ha-ha, I have nuclear supremacy of the neighborhood.
Yeah, right. Like,
you upset me, and I'll drop a bomb on your house. It's kind of funny. And yet this guy's, you know, on the level. And I'm wondering if we shouldn't, like, interview him.
Why not?
Or invite him into the studio. You know, he's practically right down the road. He's within an hour drive.
Why don't you? Yeah, let's do that.
I'll track him down.
Yeah, well, it should be too hard. He's the one with a bomb in his yard.
I think he was making it for somebody's museum is what this mock-up was all about.
Oh, I see.
Whoop, I got the wrong image up there, but we're going to go ahead with it anyway.
Okay.
Hacks and Strange Stories. The first up in the Hacks and Strange Stories, actually, I think is the only thing up in the Hacks and Strange. No, I got three of them. First one up in the Hacks and Strange Stories is ThinkGeek now has the Apple Store for sale. That's right. If you want to play Apple Store, it's got the expert bench called again? The geek counter?
Genius?
Genius bar. That's what it is.
Genius bar.
Geek
counter.
I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah.
I'm likely headed to one this week, which is, you know, so far and few between. I don't actually get to one of these. They have an upstairs and a downstairs, and apparently there are multiple sets. Introduces children to the magic of Apple. Includes stores, figures, and 60-plus accessories. I wonder if you have to keep upgrading. Oh, got to get a new iPad, too. There's another $10 accessory. Yeah.
I do like how you can buy the add-on queue line.
They're telling me this is an April Fool's product. Talk about letting the air out of my... I want one!
You didn't know this was April Fool's?
I did not know this is April Fool's.
Oh,
I thought you said the what was it, the meat?
They have like
the
three
bacon.
They have three or four things up there for April Fool's.
That's no fair. I wanted one.
Well, I did too. But till but
how do you know
the other
it's,
thing was the
how do you know it's a the, phony? Is that because the
it was on April Fool's?
Well, doesn't matter. People introduce new products all the time.
Yeah, when you click on buy now,
I am like the most gullible person in the world. The guy at the HDI conference, one of my coworkers did this to me, and I didn't believe him. This is how bad it gets. after the expo hall is closed, right, and we shut down our booth, we walk over to where the lunch tables and whatnot are on. There's kind of this portable bar. And I say, hey, Eric, where'd you get the beer? Or Brian, where'd you get the beer? He goes, right over there. They're free. Like, nobody gives away free beer. He's like, you're lying. He goes, no, it's free. Walk up. Ask him. I said, you're lying. Nobody gives away free beer. I walk up ready to hand the guy money. He goes, here you go. I'm like, wow, free beer. You know,
I didn't believe you, but you were right.
I get sucked into this every time. April Fool's, right? Right? April Fool's.
That's right. I bet you believe the arsenic-based sea monkeys they have on ThinkGeek too.
Come on.
I still think my favorite was the Angry Birds pork rinds.
The Angry Pigs.
That was funny. That was funny.
All right.
They're
so
all green colored.
Then we'll go on to the next one. Here, I got to move my desktop image.
Hey, by the
here.
Way, on the pork rinds bag, it says, all pigs must die. That's pretty funny.
On the screen, you know what pork rinds are made out of, right?
Pork. Skin.
What part? Yeah, it's the skin.
Yes.
I didn't know that until about a year ago.
Really?
Like, I'm not so sure I want to eat those anymore.
I normally don't eat them except for when I go fishing.
The spicy barbecue ones are really good.
Well, you know, was it on Beavis and Butthead a long time? They had the salsa and sour cream pork rinds. I was like, that sounds great. Sour cream and salsa or something like that.
This thing on the screen that looks like a big pile of poo or some kind of odd organism. Is affectionately known as the Mandelbrotwurst. You're all familiar with that mathematical equation, like of complex numbers that has kind of like the circly thing.
Like the fractal images?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes, fractal images come from the Mandelbrot
set. I thought you were the math geek.
Yeah. I just say circly things.
Yeah. Oh, you're trying to dumb it down for me, I see.
We have all levels of listeners on this show.
Okay. Uh-huh, that's true.
We have to be nice. Mm-hmm. If you like, we can put the Mandelbrot equation on the screen, but that wouldn't be any fun. What's more fun, and even more Wisconsin. We ought to just call this like the Wisconsin episode, right? We got the Wisconsin truck driver. We got the Mandelbratwurst.
And the host.
Oh, ba-doom. He's the cheese, right?
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but...
I just thought this was creative.
All of us in the chat room were thinking about it.
Yeah, sure. Thinking were. Yeah. Crowdsourcing. And, well, speaking of bacon, is this real? Or is this another hoax that you're going to try and tell
bacon
me?
Bacon air. Refreshing burst of bacon-flavored pure oxygen. Come on, Chuck.
It's there on the shelf, right?
It was posted on March 31st.
J&D's, the same company that brought you bacon mayonnaise, bacon lip balm, bacon envelopes, and bacon popcorn, is back at it, this time with a huffable bacon-flavored oxygen. But before you go any further, tomorrow's April Fool's Day. Don't let anybody fool you. So on that note, this is probably fake. Or it could be real.
You know what's funny is my wife doesn't like the residual smell of bacon and, you know, after you know, the oil in the air and stuff in the kitchen and stuff after we're done eating breakfast and whatnot. So I could just go around spraying this. She'd just be unhappy everywhere.
This is one of those smells that Donna couldn't stand when she was pregnant. It's like fried sausage and bacon and stuff. Oh, it made her nauseous.
Well, did Donna have any special cravings that you remember?
Not that I recall. It was more things that didn't smell good.
Really?
Yep.
Kim liked these Pop-Tarts covered in butter, toasted, and then put peanut butter on top.
Yikes. That's frightening. Mad Marv is still waiting for the wireless power cord adapter. That was his...
Yeah, that's right.
I'm waiting for the canned air. Canned darkness. The canned darkness.
Canned darkness. Don't open it up.
That's right. Schrodinger's cat is in there. Yeah, that's if the safety violation kicks in. Oh, man, this one's got a cat in it. Or does it?
Yeah.
All right, in the Remember When segment, we have 10 videos of predictions of the future. These range anywhere from the 40s, 50s, 60s, and we've seen a couple of these. There's one that's got a British... I like this one. The first one is the home computer terminal of tomorrow. And it's got this British guy, and next to him he's got this big, heavy teletype next to his bed. He wakes up in the morning and he types in... You know, it's supposed to be in good old plain English, but he's typing in these arcane commands to check his stocks. That's something I'd want next to me. Then he brings up his boy and he's learning how to do math. And type a 4 and then a plus and another 4. Now type return. That was one of them.
I like how the guy's laying in his bed and the typewriter starts kicking off right at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's like he's, where's his wife sleep? Away from the typewriter.
Exactly. Oh, I missed a couple of these. I didn't see the kitchen of the future and the clothing of the future, but we've seen the 1967 future prediction where the woman is shopping at home on her home computer and the video comes up. You know, it's almost like some of these are neat in the way that they could see the computer being used for home and stocks and finances and things.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the 60s, you know, the only thing you thought of for a computer was it's big iron in the basement.
Yeah, big iron.
Of some university or
that's
something.
That's exactly what I used to think.
Yeah. Till I got to high school or something.
Yeah.
You know so what? So we got the one with the guy at his home computer. There's another one with the cars of the future, the 1950s cars. Didn't include that one with the spare tire used for angle parking. And they also have Disney's House of the Future from 1957, which is interesting because Disney usually pulls videos like this.
No, they got, the last time we went to that show at Disney, it was still in the
plastic
retro
house
version.
By Monsanto?
What? No, it was like the house show. Show there and they go, oh, like the World of Tomorrow, whatever. You go in and you sit down and the stage actually rotates as they're telling the story. And it comes around and says, back, you know, here. And it shows like this old man talking to his grandson, showing his grandson. They're all animatronics and everything. It's supposed to be the future. What is that? I don't remember the name of it.
I'm trying to remember. Was that at Epcot?
Perhaps, yes.
Yeah, somewhere in future world, I'm sure.
I'm sure it's be revamped now.
World of Tomorrow.
And it was the same. Well, you know, a lot of that stuff hasn't been updated. So it's like,
I know.
We have cell phones now. Hello.
This one is funny because the plastic house at Disney must have been Disney World or Disneyland at this point.
Mm-hmm.
They have the refrigerator sections coming out from the lower from cupboards above. So there weren't cupboard doors. You push a button and this thing comes down, but there was sort of a front half that lowered and then a back half that lowered. So if your hand was in something in the back half and the front half was coming down, it looked like a safety hazard. And the other one was, this was supposed to be, they said there are three zones on this thing. One for refrigerated items, which would kind of be bad. I was trying to think of a creative and polite way to say that.
Be bad.
Mm-hmm. It would kind of be bad because as soon as you lower it out of the cold zone, all the cold air, cold air is heavy, it flows down. You've lost all of your cold air. So it's not very energy efficient. They said there's a refrigerated zone, a zone for frozen foods, and a zone for irradiated foods.
Wow. Like,
holy cow.
Irradiated.
Remember the good old days when you could irradiate your food.
Yeah, now we just call it microwave.
But my favorite one, I think, there was one about telecoms in the 1990s. This is as seen from the 1960s. They had a video phone on their desk with a document camera, and the girl holds up this kind of photographic plate to the screen and is able to take an image of the diagram that's being shown from the other document camera. I thought, wow, pre-fax days, that's pretty visionary.
Mm-hmm.
It was by a telecom company that's saying, look, we're installing a whole bunch of computer switching, which will enable these types of technologies. And they have a hospital of the future. But my favorite has to be number 10. It's a mock-up of the world of the future, but they're using today's images
right. And
narrating it like it was a long time ago. So it's black and white, and the guy's saying,
I missed that one.
The man streams along in his transport pod at breakneck speeds, and he's in his traffic jam in a crappy old Honda.
That's funny.
Going past a Walmart, you know?
Walmart. Yeah, that's pretty funny. I have to check that one out.
He gets home to his wife, who has form-fitting clothes, and she's wearing, like, she's overweight and has Lycra on. It's like, no!
That's funny.
Yeah, that one probably takes the cake. That was funny.
Gotta love these old videos, right?
Next up! What is next up? I gotta look at the show notes. I'm losing... Oh, you had...
You have something. And
I have something? Oh, yes! It wasn't a link that I had. In the What the Chuck... I'm not gonna play the What the Chuck thing.
Why not?
Just. Oh, you know what? Before I get to that, we need to take a real quick break. Be right back.
He wants it. He needs it. We must have Technorama. My precious.
Here's the kicker. We don't want this technology to be available to every hobbyist. That's enough. That's quite enough, Artu. Oh, he's messed with it. He must be the expert. So show us your editor.
Marty, we need to go back in time. 1.21 gigawatts.
Hey, I smell another intro. But here's the quote that really got me. Lipsum Aporum or whatever that is. 1.5.0.1. I don't know what's wrong with my voice. I can't work like this. I'm out of here.
Now we're in trouble.
What kind of garbage is that?
Hi, this is John Bell from Bells in the Battery, along with...
Hi, I'm Miss Schmackelheimer, Miss Sadie Schmackelheimer.
And you're listening to Technorama.
I'm not saying that.
You gotta say it, it's their slogan.
I don't care.
You've got to say that's the whole idea behind doing this.
I'm not saying that, it's stupid.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Get your geek on.
That wasn't so hard, was it? 101.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the Media Corner.
Sorry, folks, Media Corner's closed for the night.
Yeah.
There's no Media Corner article. What I do have instead is a quick tip. I thought of this on my trip.
Okay.
I was cleaning out my wallet. Now, what do you think of when that happened? With an opener like that, it's got to be good, right?
I said the moths were coming out. Fly.
There was no money, so you be the judge. What I did find, oddly, I'm not sure why it was in there, is my last driver's license. In January, I renewed my driver's license for 2011, but I renewed it in January, and it didn't expire until March, on my birthday, which is when most U.S. driver's licenses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I thought, now I've got two driver's licenses. What could you do with the old one?
Buy some beer?
No, keep it as a backup.
Oh, okay.
I started thinking as you travel, right?
What if your wallet's stolen? Mm.
What if your wallet's stolen while you're traveling? You've got no identity. You can't even get back on the plane. How are you going to get home? They can't replace the driver's license if you're out of state, right? And you don't have any other form of identification. Your wallet's stolen. Unless, of course, you were smart and brought a passport. So what I thought is, keep that old driver's license in a pocket of your suitcase or, you know, somewhere other than your wallet.
Even if it's expired?
Now, here's what I found out. Somebody told me that the TSA looks at the date. So, as a test, on my way home, I handed them the old driver's license, which expired last week. They took it. And it worked.
Yes, so, and they also let another guy on with a similar name as yours on the plane.
So, who stole my wallet, probably.
Yeah. So now he's got two IDs. No.
That's probably what happened. It's not fat fingering. No, think about it. The driver's license expiring is just it says you can no longer use this to operate a vehicle. It doesn't say you can't use it as an identification.
Well, it's technically your picture should be similar.
Your picture's the same, birth date's the same, as long as your address is the same, I guess. So why not use it for something useful? That's my tip of the day, and I'm sticking to it.
That's not a bad idea.
If you're overseas, what's it gonna hurt? What's that?
What's it gonna hurt? You're not gonna get any farther with it.
You can't use this, you take out your real one anyway.
No, I'm saying if you don't have your current one got stolen and you had to use that one. I mean,
right. You say, look, it was stolen. Here's my last one.
I'd rather try than not, right?
Yeah.
I guess.
Now, if you're traveling internationally, you've got your passport, make a copy of that inside page that has your picture and the document number on it. Mm-hmm. And stick. Actually, I made like three. I put one in my suitcase. I put one in my computer bag. And I think I had one in my coat pocket or something. So in case your passport's stolen, that one's extremely important.
Or some guy named Charles Tomasovic actually gets your luggage, then he's got your passport too. Whee!
I'm going to the Ukraine.
Yay! That's right.
All right, your turn. What'd you come up with?
Well, I just wanted to bring this up because I know it's everybody's probably seen it on the internet by now, but it's this 12-year-old Jacob Barnett. He's got an IQ higher than Einstein.
Seriously? How do they know that?
Well, he started off as a 3-year-old doing puzzles. I mean, or was it 80? He was doing like these 5,000-piece puzzles. He was a little withdrawn, and they were trying to figure out what was wrong with him. Well, they had him tested. He has a little bit of autism, a very slight case of autism. But they also said he was off the charts with math and whatnot. And they were encouraged to try and challenge him. Well, they said, but the challenge is we think he's off the charts as in he should be in college scale. So at least now he's 12 years old. He's doing equations. The video on this article shows him doing equations on the windows. Cause he says he's run out of whiteboard space. It's amazing. And actually he's gone to college and tutored other students. He's off the scale with the math.
Let's put that kid to work.
Well, actually, he's got a paid gig, I think, now at the University of Indiana.
Awesome.
He's not even a student anymore. So he's actually, it's amazing to see him. Here's what it was. At 3 years old, they went to a planetarium, and when the guy was asking, the lecturer asked, well, the moons of Mars, does anybody know why they're not round? They're oval shaped. And the kid asked, well, how big are the moons? He's like, he explained how big the moons were. He says, well, Mars is too large for the moon's gravitation to actually make them round. Mars actually pulls them. And he's like, Everybody was astounded. He was 3 years old when he said that. So he's been studying astrophysics and whatnot. And it's amazing. And, you know, what's funny is I was reading one of the articles about him.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned Schrodinger's cat earlier.
Yeah.
Well, I was looking at his equation earlier in the week because he mentioned it in the article. But yeah, the kid actually, in one of the articles I saw from Jacob Barnett, in there he had shown that he would explain why the Big Bang Theory was not true.
It's not true?
He says it's not true.
So he doesn't believe in like string theory?
His explanation, now I can't explain it correctly, but he was saying that he calculated back how much time it would take or how much time was needed to create 2% of the carbon in the universe.
Okay.
It would take microseconds. And if there was an explosion because of the dissipation of the heat, because the mass would have to be so big or whatever exploded, there was no way that would happen.
So he doesn't believe in the theory that the carbon is coming from the burning of the stars.
You're going to have to dive in a little bit farther.
I'm going to do that because I'm always interested in new theories about mm-hmm. that kind of stuff.
So,
because you know, inevitably nobody's really sure, but it's interesting to see how sound their logic is.
Yeah, well, it's amazing. I mean, from this 12-year-old, and he said he was going to expand on Einstein's relativity and everything. I was like, good Lord. But I've been kind of fascinated with it this week, so I've been finding all these articles about him. But his mom's been putting these YouTube videos up, and that's kind of where the ball got rolling. Well, they like I said, they had him assessed from over time, and they were providing him with the things they thought he needed, and he's actually grown out to be pretty good. But on the YouTube video, you can go, or YouTube channel, you can go see he's explaining how these equations work. And I'm like, he's lost me. I'm just like blown away.
That usually happens to us.
Yeah. And I'm trying my best. I'm trying hard to understand what he's doing. I have no idea.
Can he figure out how to get a dump truck up a mountain?
Push?
Nope.
What?
Listener Brian sent us this article from Gizmodo on how to do that.
Okay.
And
I'm sure Jacob could figure it out.
They basically use like a giant chairlift, only for trucks. It's kind of cool. Let me show you that picture. What? It's getting hauled up there. Wow. How do you move a fleet of 48-ton trucks to the top of a 6,500-foot mountain with no roads? With cables, of course. That's what the consortium of Groupement Marti Implenia is doing at Nandedrans in the Swiss Alps. I am really blowing this language up, whatever it is. They needed these Astra HD8 480 horsepower 8x6 trucks to build a pumped storage hydroelectric power plant at the summit. That's a funny place to put your power plant.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
The only problem is the only way to reach...
Was it cheaper to send electricity downhill? I
don't know. Electrons flow downhill.
Yeah. Hey, there's less resistance.
Could be. The only problem is there's no way to reach the peak by its helicopter or by using a heavy-duty cable crane. They opted for the latter. Oh, that was the only way they could do it was by helicopter. I suppose the weather would impact your helicopters. It doesn't seem like... How many trucks can you fit up there anyway? The pump storage plant will generate 600 megawatts of electricity, and it will be built inside the mountain at 5,577 feet above sea level. Workers will be able to reach the plant through a 3.5-mile tunnel. Hopefully, the company will also build hot jacuzzis for the top of them.
That is kind of a weird place, but I guess they got their reasons. But hey, I have to say, that is a really cool think out of the box type scenario to actually take a truck and move it up the mountain on cables rather than building a road that is only meant for this kind of stuff.
That would have to be really, really strong and was probably really, really expensive. So they're gonna have to get their money back on those.
Cheaper
things.
Than cutting a road in a mountain.
Or, you know, the helicopters, if they can't fly, they can't fly. But this allows you to get more equipment up and or down, since the infrastructure is already there. Right?
Yeah, I think so. That's pretty amazing.
Ingenuity at its finest. All right. Hey, we're at 45 minutes. That takes us to the end of the show.
What?
Yes, okay. That's true. Hard to believe.
The heck you say?
The heck I do say. We appreciate your support, and that I do say. If you like the show, there are many ways to show your love. Give us a call on the listener line, 206-222-CHAT. Put us in your Skype buddy list, whether using Skype on mobile or desktop or whatever. Just add Chuck Chat to your buddy list, and we'll be there. Or good old-fashioned email, technorama@chuckchat.com. All this and many more ways to contact us are available on the website at chuckchat.com. You know, there's still a tip jar, and we really, really thank the people who are donating regularly. Thank you. It's the beginning of the month, and I get a lot of people like to sync up at the beginning of the month. They put their micro payments then, and we really, really appreciate that. It helps offset the cost of bandwidth and hosting and whatnot.
I'm sorry. Was I not supposed to say beer?
No. There's too many things to do on this show. I can't drink anymore. I'll miss something even worse than I do when I'm sober. Thank you. Thank you for all of your donations. And special thanks to Michelle, Mark, Brian, and the others who contributed articles this week. We had a lot to choose from in the news feeds, but we like the stuff you give us too. So if you want to do that, send us an email. We like to see that. Also, thank you to Mad Mar for providing the great blog content during the week. If you're not going to the website or subscribing to their RSS feed, you're missing out. There's a whole lot more to this show than just what we do here on Sunday nights. There's also the network show, where we get feedback from our listeners like you, which you can do by email, phone number, Skype, that kind of thing, and stuff we put on the blog. Special thanks to Ustream, who keeps our modest live streams going on Sunday nights, and our chat room provided by ThinStack.net. Thank you very much to Steve Rinkenberg and the rest of the Brew Crew. Almost said Brew Crew. This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. Find out more at friendsintech.com and a whole bunch of podcasts over at farpointmedia.com. Awesome network over there. If you're not checking it out, do it soon. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama, and as always, a binary high five.
101.
Okay, headless body of Agnew, let's blow the strut.